You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. Two hat tricks in four games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modgepodge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me in the blue room, we are soccer vagabonds, after all. David Goss, and out in what looks to be like a scary storage closet is Matt, the armchair analyst Doyle. This is not your usual surroundings. This doesn't look like the Octagon.
No, it is. It is. I'm still back against the same wall with with the window behind me.
Oh, your back's against the wall. That's
no,
what I'm saying.
Orlando City copied what Matt Doyle has set up in his apartment, which is a wall of soccer. It's a blank wall of soccer.
Where are your supporters? Where are the flags? Where are the purple smoke bombs?
Yeah, that's a work in progress.
Gotcha.
Say.
Okay, let's talk something to Orlando City. We're going to give them some advice. You need Taquito. You need General Sal. You need some kind of grumpy cats.
Although I would be interested to hear how this show went if Doyle was clouded in purple smoke and could barely breathe.
More coughing.
You know, David, I've been in my fair share of supporter sections. I have braved the elements on game day, so I think I would manage just fine.
I think he could do it. Look, we have a great
From
show for you today.
Armchair.
Yes. look ahead, though. Hex Special is coming up later this week. Of course, there's just three MLS games this weekend. It's an international break, and it is a huge one. Canada doing their thing, trying to get used to the Octavio Zambrano era starting with the U.S. Honduras on Friday night at Avaya Stadium. This is a must-win in the hexagonal for them. And then Panama coming up that next week. Another one that really probably falls under must-win as well, despite the fact that it's down in Panama City. We will break that whole situation down on Thursday, maybe even Wednesday if we get ahead of things. We'll see what happens with that one. We're also going to talk to Brian Dunseth here in the second segment. He dropped by the studio here. He and I did MLS Match Day Live. That was a lot of fun, but what was even more fun was sitting here, Dave, for like 45 minutes and just picking his brain. If you want to know what it's like to be in the Olympic Village as like a 22-year-old in 2000 with Landon Donovan and Brad Friedel and a bunch of other like U.S. soccer
Tim
royalties,
Howard.
Yeah, you'll want to listen to that interview. We're going to put it out as a special, but we'll have a little snippet for you on this show. We can't waste any more time, though, because MLS was on fire this weekend, 36 goals in 11 matches. It was a blast. There's no doubt about that. We'll talk about the goals because we're going to figure out which team is A, the most entertaining, and B, the team that you would choose if I just took away your ability to watch anybody else this season. Also, we're going to talk best finishers with Ben Bear, the research bear, diving into expected goals. He's got some insight for us. We're going to see which of these number nines, maybe kind of those false second forwards or winger tens, like Piatti might be in that conversation. Then we'll talk about the teams that things aren't going quite so well for. Cough, DC United, cough, RSL. And we'll get to that in just a second. But first, pour one out. Pour one out for poor David Bingham, the human croquet wicket. I mean, what a tough weekend for him. He gets the call up to the national team after Brad Guzan pulls out because his wife's going to have their second child. A 2-1 loss to Kansas City in Kansas City. San Jose's perfect record is gone. And both goals kind of on him. Maybe the Benny Feilhaber one. That was more of just a great hit, but he also was frozen, wrong-footed. But that Suni Saad just wonder strike, a.k.a. pool ball with English on it that went right through his legs and was about 4 feet off target.
It goes off Bingham.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's through his legs. It hits the
inside.
Because
Suni Saad turns around. It's not even on frame.
I know. It's like 4 feet off frame. Yeah. I mean, it's not even close. That's what I'm saying. I felt so bad for him, and at the same time, I was so delighted because it was such a funny moment. Am I wrong to feel that?
No, it was a funny moment, and look, that's the game. Some of the best goalkeepers in the world have all had extreme freaking howlers. I mean, Pat Onstad still has the all-time MLS one, and Pat Onstad is one of probably the five or six best keepers in league history. So I'm sure it's pretty awful for young Mr. Bingham, and I'm sure he's hearing about it right now from the veterans at the U.S. national team camp.
Oh my God.
That's the game, man.
Shooting practice at those training sessions? Oh, man. I can only imagine what he's getting from Timmy Howard and Nick Raimondo. Just kind of the little talks. Or maybe they don't say anything. Maybe they just let it go because it's kind of the goalkeepers union. I don't know. A tough one for David Bingham, but still, I got to say, a little bit funny. All the same. Also, the ETR curse is back, guys.
False.
You don't think so? I mean, yeah. We had Christian Ramirez. Great interview. We loved it. We praised him. 6-1 loss.
That was going to happen.
We had Dax McCarty.
Yeah. Ramirez or not.
Then Dax McCarty goes down to Atlanta.
Yeah.
4-0 loss.
I think right now the miracle is that we're interviewing people who are previously cursed, and we're doing everything we can to fight it to not get on us. But, I mean, you tripping all over yourself on live shows. We're coming into this podcast. We're starting slows. We're starting hot. So maybe we are cursed.
I don't know. Maybe Atlanta United are the curse because both these guys go up against Atlanta United and get smoked. Mm-hmm. So maybe it has nothing to do with us.
Maybe it has to do with Arthur Blank's checkbook and not about us.
I don't know.
I think a lot of it has to do with Joseph Martinez. He's just so relentless at hitting that A-gap between the two central defenders. If you look back at what he's done this year, the red card for the Fire, he got in between the defenders. Yep. You know, the first goal he scored, he got in between the central defenders. If you look at the goals against Minnesota, they came against the central defender. Like, by hitting that gap between the central defenders, he has the thing that he does really, really well, and it's the most fundamental thing a center forward can do really well, and Atlanta are just freaking feasting right now because of it.
Yeah, he goes downhill, as they might say about a running back, and he's got that sort of body, and this takes me right into where I wanted to go, which is very convenient for me, and that is I'm going to take away your ability, both of your ability as well as my own, to watch any team but one for the rest of the season. I mean, in reality, obviously, we're going to watch every game. I've watched every single game of this season so far in one fashion or another. You have one team, pure entertainment value, MLS 2017. You're going to watch all these teams' games. You're going to be an expert on this team. Of course, you'll drop in other teams as they play that team. Who are you choosing? Is somebody going to take Atlanta here? I mean, is that like the choice du jour, or you got something
else?
It's
tough. It's really, really tough. I'm sitting on four teams I think are the big potentials. And you're saying I can only choose one.
Only
so I'm not even going to say who those four are.
Okay, yeah, don't take away my thunder here.
I am going to
And this team is off the board, by the way, once somebody takes them. So if you really want a team, you better get them quick.
I'm going to be – oh, man, this is hard.
Do it. Just give me a team.
I'm going to say Houston because I'm in love with watching these young kids play.
Really?
But the other part is they give up a ton of goals. So you're guaranteed good games. I mean, what Portland did to L.A. last week is like, I'm not tuning in for that. Come on, you guys could have ran them off the field, man.
And
up
you just
for 60
hold 1-0?
Minutes.
Yeah, that's a good
so
point.
So I'm going with Houston because they'll concede and they'll score. And watching Kyoto and Elise and Kubo and, you know, go out defenders one-on-one and torture them, I think would be a fun season.
Yeah, 4-2 in case you weren't paying attention this weekend in Portland. Houston up 2-1 at the break, a dime from La Pantera to Kyoto. And that little touch, that little shimmy and then the hip movement from Kyoto to finish, absolutely gorgeous. The Timbers, though, get four. They're the only team in MLS with three wins in three games. They could be on your list here, Doyle. Maybe Atlanta, as I said, going on that list. Who are you taking?
I definitely thought about Atlanta, but Minnesota. They've
seven
total goals in game one, or six goals rather in game one, seven in game two, four in game three. They're the first team to score multiple goals in Colorado against the Rapids since October of 2015. They even make the Rapids fun. I think it's a pretty easy choice. So
I did not see that one coming. I'm going to go Seattle. I'm going to go Seattle Sounders, and it's not just because of the title defense, and it's not because Portland Timbers fans already hate me, and so they need another reason to do so. I just think that what we saw yesterday, particularly in the second half, is kind of the beginnings of something. It's the spark for the potential bonfire here, because we haven't seen Clint Dempsey regularly with all these guys, except for right when Lodeiro came. And Jordan Morris turned him into a monster that he already was that, but Jordan Morris can be the guy that opens it up because all of a sudden you have somebody who can get in behind. And Clint Dempsey, if he can do anything, we know he can follow the break. We know he can hit that kind of timed run into the box and finish a la Lampard in some senses. I think this team is going to be a blast to watch. They get that big 3-1 win against the Red Bulls on Sunday night in the national TV game. Good for them. Let's talk a little bit more about the Timbers, though. I want to go back.
Yeah,
there.
I feel like they're going to be
three games.
On
I know,
this.
And I have to cover all my bases here. Four goals. Diego Valeri gets two more. Fernando Adi, you know, probably the best feat for a big man in the league. That fourth goal was just a thing of beauty. Although Tyler Derrick's going to have some questions about what he was doing, running all over the penalty box there. How have they done this, Doyle, with a back line that we said was in shambles, was in disarray, wasn't going to be able to get the job done? Somehow, some way, three games, three wins, 9 points.
Yeah, I mean, they're just going out there and, you know, they've outscored two teams, really. And then, as you said, they got that one goal in L.A. and they just kind of kept it tight and bunkered against a pretty hapless attack last week. So I think we're getting better data points from Portland in terms of their attack and how they want to send guys forward. The defense is just scrambling, man. You know, I think they're going to keep giving up goals, and I think they're being realistic. They know they got to go out and get 2, 3, 4 if they want to take points. And so far, nobody's been able to track Diego Valeri. It's even more apparent, I think, this year than in years past, because the structure behind him is so clear with Guzman and Chara. He doesn't have to worry too much about anything except getting into the box and getting goals. And then the structure on the sides with Blanco and Nagby, I expected both of them to be a little bit freer, especially Blanco, but instead they're kind of holding their positions, and they'll duck in like wingers do, but they're really holding their positions. And it all, and of course, Adi at top, it all allows Valeri to just be completely free and go wherever the gaps are appearing or the weakness is. And when you have a player of that quality, you're going to score some goals.
No doubt about it. Like that game winner from Guzman, a very nice finish from him. But the question here, which Doyle has come out and given his side of, is whether Darlington Nagby meant that assist.
No.
He says yes. You're saying no?
Yeah, I think he was trying to shoot.
I don't think it was a shot.
I think he lost his feet. I think he realized he was losing his feet and was like, I'm just going to try and get a little bit of power on this thing and get whatever I can out of it.
I don't know. I think it's in between. It's a tough one. Look, Steve Zakuani on Twitter said he called him up, says, yeah, I did that on purpose. I mean, of course you're going to say you did it on purpose. You don't say you did it on accident at all. But like, they're the only team right now with 9 points, and the Portland Timbers and their fans have got to be flying.
Still.
Yeah, that's true, but they don't have nine. They have six. Yeah, well, wait till they win that third game, Dave. Hold off now. Atlanta United, we mentioned it, Joseph Martinez, 5 goals so far. I just want to throw it out there once again. You know, I may have biffed the Wando prediction from last year, but I did say that he was a Dark Horse Golden Boot candidate.
Oh, so if you say 19 guys are
Dark
Horse,
so if I hedge my bets, then I can basically get anything right that I want
to.
Atlanta, 11 goals, 6 points. They were a man up, so there's a little question mark there.
Can I throw a little water on that?
Yeah, why not?
They didn't put away the Red Bull.
Yeah, sorry. Water.
Well, any water on fire.
Okay, that's true.
They didn't put away the Red Bulls in the first game, and they took a while to take advantage. They were up 1-0 for longer than they should have against an opponent with less men. They created opportunities, and they didn't finish them. Last game, they were insanely efficient. This game, they scored 4 goals, so you're never going to complain. But 50 minutes into this game, they should have been up at least 2-0. So that's something to watch out for them. But once again, they're really fun.
Sounds like a little case of expected goals, which we're going to get to in just a second with Ben the Research Bear. 4-0 win for them. Chicago Fire, don't jump off the bandwagon just yet. That 10-man loss is – probably not one to worry too much about, but they still have a whole lot to prove to the Chicago Fire. Seattle, 3-1 over the Red Bulls. We talked a little bit about what was going down with the Sounders. I mean, it was flowing. I loved Harry Ship in there. I thought he brought a calmness and even like a –
Well, final pass, the movements where other guys would maybe hold the ball up or play back. He's spraying the ball to the opposite side. He's opening it up for Jermaine Jones.
Yeah,
could play
different
on this
Jones
team too, though. It was really impressive. I thought,
but also
he fit in
and hitting the ball and saying, "Okay, I'm going to take the onus here, and I'm going to try to create something, or I'm going to try to take this shot." And if you have a guy's outside of Ladero, Dempsey, Morris doing that, all of a sudden, who do you focus on this team? Roldan can step up in those moments, like
he can. But I think you still focus on Ladero. But Ship playing the way he did yesterday, and I think he played pretty close to that level against Montreal as well. You know, a week and a half ago now. It gives the Sounders a ton of weapons. And remember, they still have cap space and roster slots open. This is a team that I think is going to continue to play better and better. And then they might have the sort of, you know, the ace in the hole of bringing in a new DP middle of the year.
Where would you go with that?
What's that?
Where would you go with that, Doyle?
Based on what I've seen so far, central defense. Roman Torres has not looked good in the two games he played. And while Svensson was, I think, a useful backup, he wasn't great. And Chad Marshall is getting up there as well. I know that Sounders fans want another attacker. All fans do. But in terms of practicality, pragmatism, I think they should take a hard look at going out and seeing if they could find a guy who can just lock it down in the middle of that back line.
Maybe next 5 years. You're not talking about a short-term deal. You're saying, hey, this is the next step. This is the next iteration of what we're doing. Real quick before we get to Ben Bear, Dave, Frederik Gulbrandsen.
Yeah.
Another loan, year-long loan from Salzburg for the Red Bulls. Feels like too little too late in some ways.
Why?
I don't know. It just feels like another reach.
No, I thought what he showed was he has a ton of speed. He's got decent ball control. He didn't really get into dangerous areas.
Olympic level diver.
But the whole team didn't. You'd love to have them in preseason to build a system around a guy.
I'm just saying for a team that was first in the East.
Yeah.
To go back to that sort of transaction that didn't work last year with Omar Damari.
But that doesn't mean it can't work. And you look at other teams.
But is it inspiring?
I don't think they care. I think they want to win an MLS Cup, and they don't care
feel
if you're
that.
Inspired or not.
Okay, fine.
This is a Simon Borg line of questions.
But doesn't
Andrew,
have to, is it effective?
Continue.
Fine. Is it effective?
I can't answer that yet because it's only 1.5 games into it.
No, I need
but
text.
I'll tell you that Verón's out hurt. They don't have a guy to play that role. They need more attack. They know that because they can't score goals in two-legged affairs. They can't do it. They couldn't do it in CCL. They didn't do it last year in the playoffs or 2 years ago. So they went out and found a guy who's 24 years old, who's got speed, who can play aggressively. It seems like he can play in either role, so he'll play alongside Bradley Wright Phillips, maybe in a better way than Verón would even, because Verón keeps Phillips away from the goal, which I don't really like. You see every time he gets in the box, he scores. I don't know why you're pulling him back to pick up the ball and create for your teammates. So I think there's a chance. He had one play where he picked it up on like his own 18 and ran the entire length of the field with two defenders on him. But then he didn't do anything after that. So you're waiting for
it. Yeah, look, I'm just saying.
I'm
not sure this is the move after you trade Dax McCarty.
I don't think this is that move.
No, sure.
I think the summer's still that move.
Okay.
So this is another opportunity to get a player in, but it's not the cornerstone move that you're going to make.
That's a good point.
There's still
that's
a center back to come.
They also have 6 points from 3 games, and their loss was on the road against the defending MLS Cup champions. So I think that, like,
inspire me, Doyle. Inspire me. And the bare necessities of life. Whoa, that is a bear call. That is definitely a bear call. That means the research bear is rolling in. What's up, Ben? How you doing? What'd you have for lunch?
I think I'm going to go with Snickers. It has everything in it.
Snickers for lunch? That's it? That's all you had?
Snickers for lunch?
Yeah, I guess he craved that. That hunger craving. He met
Well,
it
he
there.
Was being a diva.
He was.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just living that was. Diva life.
Yeah, living the diva life and also living the expected goals life. We're going to talk a little bit about who the best finisher, the number 9, whatever you want to make it in MLS is right now. That's because after 2 games at home, Orlando are 2-0-0 with 3 goals. From who else? Kalen Carr's favorite player in the history of time, Kyle Larin. A couple nice finishes here. There's also, you know, the likes of Ruti. He's killing it in Dallas. Got them a result against New England, 2-1 in that game. Superman, Christian Ramirez is showing things. I mean, Adi, Josie, Ola Kamara, David Villa. I mean, there's a lot of names in this best finishers, but you know who the guy who's overperforming is right now, and maybe that's the best estimation.
I mean, based off of the expected goals numbers, which don't include PKs, right now the best finisher is Aruti. The guy has 3 goals. On his expected goals numbers, you would have only expected him to score 0.57 goals. So
which makes sense.
He's 2.4 above that right now.
He went on the Landon Donovan Slovenia tip this weekend.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, he should have had a hat trick in that game.
Yes.
He should have had a hat trick. Who else is up there at the top of those rankings?
Well,
who's overperforming?
The top 5, obviously, number 2, Joseph Martinez. No surprise, 5 goals. Based on his chances, it was 2.8, his expected goals numbers. Then you got Kyoto in Houston, Godoy in San Jose, and Kubo in Houston as well.
So yeah. Who do you think honorable Godoy for Golden Boot?
I mean, what, he's on pace for, what, like 60 goals? I think you can probably put that one down. That's chalk, baby. Put it right down. That's going to happen for them. But, no, seriously, outside of expected goals, I was watching on Saturday. I was sitting around thinking, man, there are probably more nines, more center forwards, more finishers, more goal scorers in this league that I'm excited about than in the last ever. So what's up? What's in the water, Doyle? Like, when you watch these games, do you feel the same way? Do you see this quality, like this jumping quality, especially in the 18?
I do. And I think it, I mean, obviously it's twofold. It's producing better talent domestically. Guys like Kyle Larin is, you know, for all intents and purposes, a domestic player. Obviously Jordan Morris as well. But Tam has opened up the ability to either sign guys who are very, very good as number nines, or to use that money on the midfield and then just go out and crush it with your DP slots up top. It's made the league more fun. It's made it higher scoring. It is going to make it harder for domestic talent to get on the field, but that's the way professional soccer is. If you want to play, you got to go out there and win the job.
Yeah, you got to earn it at this point. I'm loving Fernando Adi so far. I still think that Ola Kamara is going to be there at the end of the year for that golden boot. Who's your favorite nine finisher right now, Research Bear? What are you thinking?
Don't go
by the numbers. Go by your heart.
My heart?
Yeah.
I thought I'm the numbers guy.
You are, but I want to hear
your heart.
I want, what do the stats tell you? What do your heart say?
His heart is like Matrix. It's made of just moving numbers.
Gotcha.
My heart is still with David Villa. I mean, The dude is just class. He's one of the best DPs of all time in this league. One of the best finishers of all time in this league. The numbers say BWP. The guy overperformed by 7 goals last year. Nobody else was even at 5. He was just the best finisher by far last year, and he's been one of the best over the past 4 years.
Dave, I'm going to roll the ball into the box. You get to choose who's going to be on the end of it. Who's going to be on the end of it right now?
I mean, Giovinco, I think, is the obvious one because he can score in so many ways.
That's the crazy thing. We're sitting here talking about all these guys.
Well,
and like,
out of sight, out of mind for 1 week.
That's true.
And he hasn't scored yet this year. So,
but I think David Villa is an obvious shout as well because he's of his career. But also he scores multiple ways. He can shoot from outside. He gets headers in the box, all those different styles. And then Joseph Martinez, we haven't seen that much of in this league consistency-wise. But when you talk about what makes Giovinco great, and one of the things is he's young and in his prime, Joseph Martinez has that going for him as well. As he's a guy feels like could play 25, 30 games and score 20 goals.
Yeah, I mean, he's rolling right now.
I mean, I can't say 60.
If you're a goalkeeper, don't come out on this guy. Make him finish past you because he'll waltz around you. I'm going to go Wando just because, you know, because I have to after last year. Yeah.
Troll moves?
Yeah, a little bit of a troll move
there.
I
see you.
Yeah, hey, I like it. I'll go with that. Let's move on here because Minnesota got a point. I want to have the loon call. Like,
That's not a loon.
Bad loon. Poor loon.
How well? Now I agree that's not a loon because I don't believe
that's
in the thing.
That's more like a mammal.
How do you know anything about loon? Do you actually know what a loon sounds like?
No, I just
like?
Know that's okay. Definitely not it.
I'm on the same.
We're gonna in a future segment here. We're gonna.
Guy,
go
you
loon
guys
call.
Have never seen On Golden Pond, I guess.
I don't know what that is. That old man Doyle coming out of.
I know what that is, but no, I've not seen it.
Back to the wall over here, Minnesota. They got a point. Doyle mentioned it. They scored 2 goals in Colorado. Superman, of course, Christian Ramirez with that near post header. Hot Boy gets the PK. Justin Davis with what I think is a clear red card, what the army of Minnesota supporters who follow me on Twitter think is absolutely not a red card. But, you know, that's either here or there.
I was very confused by that backlash.
Yeah.
That's the most
red card.
Basic red card in the world. Bad touch to reach.
Yeah.
That's like the most basic one.
You know what? Look, let them have their homer takes. They can have those takes. It's all good.
Andrew's building another rivalry.
I'm going pretty hardcore troll in this one. What'd you take away from this one on Minnesota's side, Doyle? Is this an improvement? Like, are they getting better? I know the first 2 weeks were so bad.
How could it not be?
Well, I mean, they took 2 guys out of the lineup who were just, you know, weren't doing well, we'll say, in the first couple of weeks, in Demidov and Jermaine Taylor, and they replaced him with a couple of guys who did better in Kalman, and even with the red card, I thought Davis was an improvement. So I think that's step one. They also Adrian Heath used Ibarra on the left wing instead of going in a different direction, and Ibarra may lack a little bit of magic in the final third, but he's a dogged and reliable two-way winger. And when you have that, then you're suddenly a better defensive team as well. So I think that, you know, there's enough talent on this team to not be terrible. And I think they showed that. And they're going to have to obviously continue to build it. And I think the most important thing is figuring out what went wrong with their scouting, because they spent money they shouldn't have spent, and they can't make that mistake on DPs this summer.
No, they cannot. Speaking of terrible, right now RSL and DC United, I'm sorry, Clareton Cobalt and Red and Black fans, but right now it's not looking so good.
I mean,
DC United hasn't scored a goal since Barack Obama was president.
Nice. I'm not going to start with
in the league, at least. In the league.
I'm not going to start with the DC United stuff, but going RSL, the amount of injuries they've had, and then they get a red card in the 40th minute, which they held out for 35 minutes without giving up the lead on that one. Chad Barrett had a pretty open opportunity to put them up 2-1.
Had to finish that one.
Yeah, like they haven't been healthy yet. They haven't even been remotely healthy yet. Now, you could say, well, my worry is that they have players on their team like Chris Schuler that they're kind of relying on that don't stay healthy. That could be your worry. But from the full team-wise, I wouldn't jump off any cliffs yet. If I'm RSL fans, I'd stay a little bit patient. Rusnak looked better in the few minutes.
Will
than
not
even.
Be here, though, this weekend. No,
he won't.
He's going to be on international duty.
I get the point you're making, Gasman, that the injuries have obviously been pretty tough for this team to deal with, but they don't look any different than they did down the stretch last season when
they don't
were
have
playing the same
Plata
way.
With Rusnak. Like, they don't have their
best
player.
The point is that even last year with João Plata healthy, they didn't score more than one goal in their last 10 games. This is an attack that's not working with the pieces that they have together. I think obviously the red card was brutal to take, but the 4-3-3, as it's done for the last couple of years, exposes Kyle Beckerman.
But this was him getting a yellow. This was not that
I get what you're saying, but at some point, you have to either make the hard choice and bench the guy who can't keep up with the game, even if he's a club legend, or you have to change the formation. It has not worked for RSL.
And I'm going to say it right now. You can talk about the refereeing, and I thought it was inconsistent this game. Dissent is not going to fly. If you haven't figured this out yet, MLS players, you can't talk back to the refs in the way that you had in years past, and you certainly can't be demonstrative with them. You're going to get a yellow card. We saw 7 this weekend, probably 8. One got classified as unsporting behavior, but this is a big trend. They put on that point of emphasis, and they're going to stick to that stuff. DC United, though, Ben, do you have expected goals on them? Because this is tough. Patrick Mullins, which I had to throw out there just so people can drink, because you may not be able to for a while because he pulled up with that hammy injury. There's some questions right now. It's not pretty.
They've been really unlucky so far, I would say. I mean, the expected goals numbers prove that. They've basically created the ninth best chances of any team in MLS, yet they haven't scored. So really it comes down to finishing. You know, we had Ortiz with a couple of big chances in that game. You had Mullins with a couple of big chances before he went out. They just haven't been finishing, but the chances are there. Just a matter of finishing them. Again, as I said last week, I'd be more concerned about the defense and the play of Steve Birnbaum right now if I was a DC fan.
Yeah, 2 PKs given up. Crew SC needed that win. They got it from 2 penalty kicks. And, hey, this time, Pipa Higuain shared with a Kamara. That's a new story there in Columbus. We're going to go to the break when we come back. U.S. national team changes, some roster injuries, some moves, and Brian Dunseth.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extratime Radio from the Blue Room and wherever it is that Doyle is. I'm Andrew Wiebe, David Goss. Here we go, the U.S. national team with some injury concerns. We talked about the roster on the last show. Well, some things have changed. Sasha Kljestan is in. Matt Beisler is in. David Bingham is in. Graham Zusi is in. That's because Bobby Wood, Fabian Johnson, and Guzan are out. Should we be worried here, Doyle? I mean, this is a must-win game, and all of a sudden, right back, we're at like 8th, 9th down the depth chart, and Fabian Johnson's one of the best players on this team. Same thing for Bobby Wood. I mean, those are big losses.
Yeah, they are big losses. And it's not nothing. I think a little bit of concern is obviously warranted, but the U.S. are actually deeper now than they've ever been in the past. Jozy Altidore, Clint Dempsey, Jordan Morris all scored this weekend. Christian Pulisic is Christian Pulisic. Jorge Villafania is back in the lineup for Santos. If you look, even with the injuries, there's no excuses. I mean, the U.S. are going to their fifth choice right back, which is going to be Michael Orozco. I would wager. And he's a starter for one of the best teams in Liga MX. This is our fifth choice at that spot. Mm-hmm. And granted, he has had his ups and downs in red, white, and blue, but there's no question the talent is there.
A lot of downs for Roscoe Fiscal. He's a player that Klinsmann got killed for relying on.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. And I think that it's, like I said, it's less than ideal that he's out there. But Bruce said, like, look, if DeAndre Yedlin or Eric Lehi were here, they would have been on the team. And those are both right backs. And Fabian Johnson, I think, was there to be a right back. And you could tell that, the information that makes me think so is that Graham Zusi, who is now a right back, was called in to replace him. So I think that, look, injuries happen. And you just got to deal with it. The U.S. now has more depth than ever before. Even with these guys out, there can be no excuses. There's enough talent, more than enough talent, to get three at home and at least a point on the road.
We're going to go really deep into this stuff on Thursday or Wednesday, depending on how the schedule goes here. Just look out. Download everything we throw your way. You know you want to do it. In our Hex special, I think we'll talk to Roger Espinoza as well. He's on that Honduras team. Kyoto, La Pantera, all those guys are headed to San Jose for a really big match. Do they stick with two forwards?
No, I would change the formation because what we were talking about, I think Fabian Johnson was a big part of the creativity. Losing that, I think you have to find a way to get someone else in the lineup to help out. Obviously, also Bobby Wood and Jozy Altidore's relationship. Not saying Dempsey can't play with him, but he's a different type.
We're not thinking Jordan Morris could be a part of that. Kind of a like for like.
Maybe. I mean, I think that if you trust and want Dempsey on the field so much, Bobby Wood getting hurt means that you now have to go with that option. I don't know that you pass him up now for Morris and bring him off the bench. So I would expect to see maybe a formation change. I think with bringing Sasha in, he was saying, I think that my better team system comes with these two wingers and these two forwards. But now that they're not there, that doesn't mean you can't go with Sasha. Even if it's plan B, mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you say, well, now I'm stuck the way I am. That was one of the things we were frustrated with about Jurgen. So I wouldn't mind seeing that. Some system where he plays some form of number 10 in there.
Yeah, get him close to Christian Pulisic. We saw how well that worked, although against lesser competition. Make sure you tune in for that Hex special. That's coming up later this week. Also tuning, so we got a special with Brian Dunseth. We sat down with him right here in the Blue Room for about 45 minutes, talking everything from the 2000 Olympics to TAM to that 2001 Miami Fusion team. It's good stuff. Here's a little bit of a hint as to what you might get in that special. Let's go to that right now. Back now on Extra Time Radio, Andrew Eby, David Goss, and drumroll please, Brian Dunseth. Dunny, in the house.
What's
we don't
up,
have
man?
A drum, but you're in the Blue Room. You're hanging out. This is a bonus. If you subscribe on iTunes, if you listen to the podcast, you're bonus material, Dunny. How do you feel about that?
I feel great, man. Listen, being in the headquarters, my first time, I came in yesterday. We did What Did Breck Shea Say on
what
Facebook
the Breck.
Live.
Yeah.
What the Breck. I had a blast with you. But, man, these digs. So nice.
Yeah.
So nice. I felt like a princess coming down the stairs and the lights started turning on one section at a time.
It's good to hear that because I think people maybe sometimes think that we talk about being in the broom closet, in the aquarium.
We have a nomadic experience.
Yeah. I think people think that we're just quasi-homeless podcasters.
Well, just so you guys know, I came in 1997, second Project 40 player ever signed to Major League Soccer. Ivan Gazidis, who runs
Arsenal. Generation Adidas before
there
was
pre-Generation Adidas. Yeah. Sunil Gulati, Ivan Gazidis, who's at Arsenal. Todd, who else was there?
I mean, Abbott had to be there at that time.
No, Abbott wasn't there. Tim Hankinson. Okay. They all sat in my parents' living room to try to convince them that their son, after three semesters at Cal State Fullerton without declaring a major, should sign for Major League Soccer for a grand total of $27,000 a year, $778.76 per Massachusetts tax laws. And
what was the sell?
professional soccer and not paying for college.
Right.
Because I wasn't on full scholarship. So right. They were like, hey, you want to come? And when Sunil Gulati said, hey, we're starting this thing called Project 40, and it was down in Chula Vista with the under-20 national team at the time. We were preparing to go to Malaysia for the under-20 World Cup, and my hand just shot up. And all the guys that Benny Olsen, who's at UVA, and all the UCLA kids, and Matty Chulis, and whatever, all these guys are like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, guys, I'm not on scholarship, so you guys do whatever you got to do. I'm out.
Right.
Like, I'm going. And so my introduction was Thomas Rongen, July 3rd, sitting between Mike Burns and Alexi Lalas, and Thomas Rongen with an unfiltered red in his mouth with the spit connecting his bottom lip to his top lip scared the living bejesus out of me during his very first video session. And was telling Teddy Chronopoulos he should let the ball hit him in the face on a free kick, even though he knows he probably has a second career as a model, that he was a terrible soccer player. And I looked at Alexi and I said, can I go back? Can I rescind this contract and maintain my eligibility?
What were those days like? We love these, like, because people sometimes forget. They see the now shiny version of MLS with the beautiful stadiums, or opening one in Orlando, and there's expansion teams.
Yep.
And Atlanta has 55,000 people, and Joseph Martinez is an international at 23 who's scoring goals in the league. There was a time when it wasn't quite so shiny.
I mean, you go back even to 2003, 2004, remember Dragon Stadium, the high school football stadium in Dallas before the stadium was finished. It's funny you bring this up, because Dante Washington and I talk about this quite a bit.
People are going to be on Wikipedia all through this episode.
Oh, yeah. Going back. Uh-huh. Tanque Hurtado and Wilde Harris. And I'll drop names. We go back, and Greg Lawless and I were just talking about it a second ago. Playing for the New England Revolution, training at Brandeis University. Fire alarms going off in the bathroom because Walter Zenga and Beppe Galderisi are having a smoke after practice. in the shower. It was playing professional soccer and just being alive and being in the moment and having an outlet and being so thankful that in 1995 and 96 I played college, because guys that were 2 years older than me had no place to go after their eligibility ran out. Maybe a couple guys ended up in Denmark. Maybe a guy ended up in German third division. Maybe a guy was lucky to go to Mexico. But to be there and watch the LA Galaxy against the New York, New Jersey Metro Stars at the Rose Bowl in 1996 and know that there was a path, there was a trajectory, there was something that you could actually be after college was phenomenal. So for me, a kid with less talent than anyone else, watching guys with more talent in their pinky toe, being able to step on the field. I remember being on the under-20s and being with Josh Wolf and Benny Olsen and playing and scrimmaging the LA Galaxy and kicking Kobe Jones for the first time. And
remember the first time you kicked Kobe.
Oh, and Benny crushing Kobe with a comment and all of us giggling and laughing. man, we were such jerks, entitled jerks. But it was everything. It still is everything. And I have a hard time, and maybe it's just me having the institutional knowledge of how hard it was back in the day and how close we were to not surviving on so many different occasions, and then to see $100 million expansion clubs coming in. It has surpassed my wildest dreams, and I'm still so thankful to be a part of it and to see not only MLS, but USL and the lower leagues and the opportunities for guys. Guys can make careers out of it. And that just wasn't the case 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago.
That U20 team, though, early on, were other guys talking about MLS? Like, what was the idea for players at that level where they knew they could probably play pro of, like, what they wanted their careers to be?
No. At that level, I mean, this was the barometer. If you were at UCLA, if you were at Clemson, if you were at University of Virginia, you did not walk away from that college scholarship, because those guys, it was about getting your college education and what would you do next, because you had that incredible piece of paper that said you could basically walk through the door of any company and get a job right away. No, it wasn't about playing soccer. Maybe there's a chance. But then Carlos Parra broke the mold. And thankfully, Carlos failed an English class in high school. which led to his being ineligible at the University of Maryland. And he had just been capped because there was a strike with the U.S. men's national team over their player agreement. So Steve Sampson took a bunch of unknowns to Chile and got a decent result. Carlos Parra was one of the guys, and all of a sudden it was like, well, hey, U.S. soccer, Nike, MLS, partnership, can we do this? Can we provide maybe scholarship-ish material for kids to go back to school? Maybe that can be the incentive to get guys to come just be a little bit younger. And again, it was an easy decision for a couple of us, and a couple guys took a little bit longer, the Chris Albrights and the Benny Olsons and the Brian Wests. But again, it all came down to which guys were at which massive college and the weight of that graduation on the shoulders of parents saying, you're not leaving for that money. Mm-mm. And then all of a sudden, 2 years later, Benny's on like $100,000. And I remember looking at him like, why didn't you get the $27,000?
You were messed up. You were the guy that really should have been taking him in the face. Oh, huh? Man. The free kicks, like, Dunny, get in there, man. Move him out of the way.
I still will never change being able to. I will never trade the ability to play for TR, Thomas Rongen. I mean, if you could never look in the mirror and hold yourself accountable, you learned how to do that within the first 2 weeks of playing under Thomas, because he would hold you accountable. He was hilarious, and you knew that unfiltered red Dutch mentality was coming at you really, really fast.
You're talking about some of these names and the Josh Wolfs of the world, and I'm thinking back to 2000 Olympics. Mm. I looked at that roster this morning.
Crazy,
it is,
right?
Unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. You got the Tim Howards of the world, DeMarcus Beasley's, Landon Donovan's, Brad Friedel, Agus is here, Frankie Hayduk, yeah. Danny Califf, Olsen, Vahanas, Albright, Corrales, Victorine. I mean, the
Connor Casey,
the legendary Brian Dunseth. It goes on and on and on. I mean, what were the training sessions for this? Like, what was the? You're going to Sydney. You're trying to win a gold medal.
Yeah.
We've had some issues qualifying recently for this tournament. What was the mindset going into that? What was it like to be with these guys day in, day out?
You know, for as incredible as that team was, it wasn't about the players. It was about Clive Charles. And when he passed away, I think U.S. soccer, college kids, NCAA, you lost a one in a million. Because for as much as – and listen, everybody tells Clive Charles stories, and everybody's talking about a father figure, a best friend, all that, and that's exactly what he was. And
Just so you know, NSL legend, University of Portland guy. I mean,
started,
like,
London kid, started West Ham, one of the first black players to play for West Ham, played for the Portland Timbers. Yeah, ended up staying when the Timbers contracted through one of the collapses of the early days of the leagues.
Go wiki that, for sure.
Yeah.
Go look
University
that
of Portland men and women, Stevie Cherundolo, Christy Sinclair, Shannon McMillan. I mean, he's Heath Pierce, Connor Casey. I mean, the names go on
Luis
and on.
Luis Robles.
Yeah. Luis Robles, another
one. On a
Darren
streak.
Sawatsky. I'll go
yeah,
super deep.
I mean, these are the sort of history lessons that I think, you know, and I think we have some incredibly smart listeners who know the history of soccer in this league, but Clive, you have to go look this up.
Yeah, Clive Charles, 100%.
Anyway, so you guys are, you know, in training. This is for Clive.
So, I mean, so we got done with the under-20 World Cup in Malaysia, and Clive was there. And I just remember knowing who he was. And then next thing you know, after the tournament's over, he's calling us together. And we're going down to, at the time, Clive was still the assistant coach with Steve Sampson. So we're in Orlando at Disney World Complex, and we had like a dual camp. And after that camp, a bunch of us got to kind of stick around and train with the first team for the full national team. And it was kind of set in motion. Like, here's the pathway. The success at the under-23s, which we were all 20, 21 at that time still. We knew in 2000 the Olympics were on the horizon. So we basically had 2.5 years together where every month we would even get together just for a one-off game just to keep the stylistic idea together. And so I know the 4-4-2 with the diamond is a Jason Christ thing in MLS, but the 4-4-2 in the diamond was what we had played from the beginning of 1998 through the Olympics. And you could play anybody against – you could play a 3-5-2, 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1, whatever, and you could adjust because we knew – we just knew how to play it. It was our system. It was to the point where it was so ingrained in our minds how to play any opponent in the system that Clive wouldn't even have to say anything. You know, we could just instantly recognize and adjust immediately. But we traveled the world. I mean, we went to Germany and we went to England and we beat Liverpool at Liverpool. We beat Manchester United at the Cliff. And they were obviously reserves with like sprinkled in and Danny Murphy's and those types. And, you know, the Phil Neville's and the West Browns of the day. But, you know, we traveled the world. We went to France. We went to Germany, went to Spain. We beat Sevilla at Sevilla. It was just an incredible time. And then to go to the Olympics and have the additions, you know, to lose Aiden Brown to a knee issue, but to bring in a Brad Friedel, you know, to have Chris Armas be our defensive midfielder heading in the tournament and him tear his knee. Pete Vahena slides in alongside Johnny O'Brien, and we bring Jeff Agus to add Frankie Hayduk to the mix and the dude on the right-hand side. And then to be in a group where you're playing Cameroon, you're playing Qatar, you're playing Czech Republic, then you knock out Japan in penalties, then you lose to Spain. But, you know, in the bronze medal match, I hit the crossbar in the post and go down the other way, and they get a penalty. And just to know, like, how close you were. Mm-hmm.
By the way, that Cameroon team, Samuel Eto'o is the star of that team. Yeah. They won the tournament.
Yep,
that was a team.
Yeah,
you guys finished above them in the group.
They beat Xavi Puyol in the final. I mean, Italy had Rino Gattuso, and it was incredible.
Are you guys?
Tournament.
I mean, we always hear about the village. Do the soccer players hang out? Do you have any, you know, are you drinking Kool-Aid next to Xavi?
So it was a little bit different. Okay, so.
You're on the edge of your seat here. We had to cut off Dunny, but that's because the full interview, all 45 minutes, Dave, is going to be put out as a special. I mean, we went all over the place with this guy. Olympics, Miami Fusion, Tam, Gam, Sam I Am.
USU-17 residency, yeah. U.S. national mm-hmm. team. What it's like to put on the jersey, what it's like to get called up, how good this current squad is.
Why he thinks the next 3 years are going to set MLS up for years to come. I mean, it is a doozy. You'll have to go download that one. Remember, you have to check back in for that Hex special as well. We're going to go to the break now. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratimeradio. With any comments, questions, or reactions.
Now you've been maxing on my car. Back now on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Reby, David Goss, finishing things off here from the Blue Room. What do we got, Dave? What are people saying?
Well, people like to compliment us, and people like to rip us.
Okay.
People like to rip us
first part
more
than
they like to compliment us.
The second part was understandable.
So let's start with maybe a little bit of a compliment. For Matt Doyle, Jared Quackenbush on Twitter says, you called it.
Jerry Quackenbush?
Yeah.
What a name. That seems fake.
Wow. Really? You just go there immediately?
I don't know.
Oh, my God, Andrew.
Okay, fine. Maybe he's he probably exists.
He said, didn't armchair analyst call it on Extra Time Radio? Carlos Rivas, breakout player of the year, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, look, he doesn't look like the same player that he was when he entered the league, and that had to happen for him to be in the running for breakout player of the year. I mean, we knew he was fast. We knew physically he would be a bad matchup for a lot of defenders in this league. I did not see some of this combination play coming, but that second goal, the movement and the touch to free up Kyle Larin and to bring that defender out and to open up that space, that's impressive. And if they can do that, we may not be talking about Kaká that much.
Oh, and the first goal, he gets the cross in for Larin, and Larin said in his post-game interview, I know when Rivas is going down the wing, I have to get in the box. I don't know that. I mean, Kyle Larin's a good guy. I'm not saying he wouldn't have said this, but right. I don't know if it would have been true in past years. Rivas is just playing at a higher level soccer-wise. Jason Lemberg says, after listening to Dax McCarty on Extra Time Radio, I'm submitting my vote now. Future USMNT coach, such an intelligent soccer mind. And Danny Girard said we should have Dax on every single show every week.
Yeah, Dax has got a future in media, I think, if he wants it. That's the question, if he wants it. I'm wondering where I get my vote for national team coach. What does Austin Lemberg or Jason Lemberg have that we don't have? Why can't we get that? Does everybody get a vote?
What are you talking about? Jason Lindbergh's out here putting himself on the line, and you're coming after him for
no,
voting.
No, I'm not coming after him. I don't know. The question is, what does Dax want to do after? We should have asked him that. Maybe we dropped the ball here.
Well, we definitely dropped
the ball. We definitely did drop that
ball. What? Who right now, early on, in 25 years, current MLS player?
Michael Bradley.
Oh, that's too cliche.
Is it? I know it's cliche, yeah. But.
I'm going to say.
Yeah, who? Yeah, this is a good question, though. Who could be the guys that do one day coach?
I could see, while he likes things outside of sports, I could see DeMarcus Beasley in that conversation.
I think he feels like more of an assistant coach. More of like a talent development.
But
like,
you become an assistant coach and
yeah,
people
you
move
see
around
what happens
and things
from there.
Happen.
Yeah. How about a Will Trapp? Maybe
well,
in Columbus. Maybe in
yet.
Columbus. Yeah, I mean, you don't know yet. You're the one out here inventing this question, and you don't know yet. What are you talking about?
I'm trying to think.
Diego Valeri.
Else.
He's the next Portland head coach. How about that?
That
Caleb
sounds
Porter might. He may never want to interview with us again. Yeah, that, me saying that.
It sounds very realistic, mm-hmm. though. That sounds yeah. very possible. Now that we've done the nice stuff, we have to say that people are telling us that the curse is back, and I think they're blaming it on us. We said it on the top of the show, but people are saying. Christian Ramirez on ETR before a 6-1 loss. Dax on before a 4-1 loss. ETR curse.
Yeah, it's not back. I don't think it was ever real. I think it just so happens, you know, happenstance. It just there's no logic to a curse. It's all just happenstance. So continue to come on our show. Continue to agree to interviews, everyone. If Brian Dunseth, if something happens to him, then maybe we got something happening.
Yeah, then,
knock on wood.
Then
knock
we have,
on wood.
Then
knock
we have an
wood.
Issue. Matthew Graham tweets in. He says, why do people at the office think we listen if not for the absurdly early conclusions about MLS teams?
And this was from people ragging on us for like jumping to conclusions 3 weeks in. And I'm 100% with you. What is the fun of all this unless we are just, you know, wildly making predictions? Okay, not wildly. That was the wrong word. Logically, in a very well-researched way, making possibly correct predictions that nobody has any idea what will happen with.
Grayson says that MLS analyst's insistence/prediction that Fabian Johnson would play right back is the reason he got hurt because everyone else that plays right back for the U.S. national team's
that sounds
hurt.
Like an ETR curse.
Ooh, you think
tweet.
It goes under
yeah,
that one?
Yeah, I think
more.
It goes all the way. It goes from even though if we didn't have him, we said something about him and then it circled back around. It was very roundabout, but I think that's what he was trying to say.
So we got an email from Will in Atlanta. It's a little interesting, but basically he thinks that the punishment for a handball in a box is too harsh. He said the infamous ball to hand and instinctive defensive reactions in the box don't rise to the same level of an infraction such as a trip or a push, yet both are PKs. So he would like to see it be separated, I think, and the ball to hand would be an indirect free kick and the handball to ball would be a penalty kick.
I just think you're asking for too much in the moment, too many extra steps that the referee
well, it's
the has to make.
Same as a card. Right? He's saying whether or not there was purposeful contact or not, whether it was malicious or not. It's the same concept.
Yeah, but it almost doesn't matter. Like you got to reward the attacking player. And even if you're saying, oh, hey, that didn't look intentional, the fact that you took away an attacking chance using a part of your body you're not allowed to use, I think at some point you just have to say, this is the rule. Defenders, you are the ones that adapt. The referee shouldn't have to adapt. The attacking player shouldn't have to adapt. We want an entertaining game. We want to see goals scored. We want to see opportunities. So you have to adapt. Defenders, either take the ball away before they get there or get your arms behind the back or make sure it doesn't hit you. I'm okay with the rule. But if you have any suggestions for alternative soccer rules, we definitely want to hear those. Hit us with those.
Andy from Chicago says, if you allow Colorado to score 2 goals, which Minnesota did, is that like letting teams that actually attack score 4? If so, is allowing 4 goals an improvement for Minnesota?
What do you think?
That is a knock on 2 separate MLS clubs at the same time, and he's from
petty.
Chicago.
Do we think that Colorado goals count for more?
They're 1.5s.
1.5 goals.
So that counts as 3 in that game instead yeah. of 2, which mm-hmm. is still a big improvement mm-hmm. over 6-5.
I think Minnesota goals should probably count for more, too, at this point, honestly. I don't know. And also, but the flip side is goals that Minnesota gives up probably count for less. Right?
So you've got your whole other bracket,
yeah.
whole other
uh-huh.
season.
So it's
going
really
on.
It's like expected goals, but way less scientific.
What do you think about knocking a team for playing against 10 men? Because we have an email from Mike, and he's saying, I'm hearing people say, yesterday Atlanta, it wasn't as impressive because they played against 10 men for most of that game. When he says he thinks it's the opposite, due to the change of strategy after a red card and Chicago Fire focusing on defense first, it makes it even more impressive that Martinez was able to score these goals and Atlanta was able to create these chances. I knocked it a little bit in yeah. this show. I think that sorry, I'm taking this question.
No, no, go ahead. I don't need them all.
That it's almost like the amount of time matters, right? The teams always play better and lock it down defensively normally right after they give up a red card. So if you get one in the 11th minute, you should dominate that team. If they get in the 75th, I can understand that you don't get a win.
You've already kind of shifted into the mode where you're not going to send everybody up top. I mean, look, it has to matter. We're going to take this into consideration. And we have with, say, San Jose. You know, we've praised them. We had people emailing us and tweeting us saying, hey, where's the love for at right now? Yeah, two wins. Both are at home. Both were against 10-man teams. I mean, that matters. And right now, our sample size is 3 games at the very most. So we're still dealing with only 270 minutes. So it's hard to say. But, look, 10 men matter.
We talked a lot. You talked about dissent. We talk a lot about red cards. Jeff Fossum, how many games have ended with one team playing a man down this season? We don't have that exact number, but we have 9 red cards so far in 3 weeks in 2017 with 32 games played. Last year, 2 less games at this exact time, 10 red cards had been shown. 2 years ago, 6 less games played, 9 red cards had been shown. So
about in line.
It's not off the charts with what we've seen.
Although in 2013, we've got 26 games played at this point and no red cards. So it ebbs and flows.
Well,
certainly.
That year they had changed the die, so they were more orange cards.
Mm, gotcha. That makes no sense.
But 88 goals so far this season through 32 games. Last year at this point, 90 goals. But 2 years ago, 26 games, 51 goals. So goal scoring's up the last two years
in
early on. You always see kind of outlier crazy scores, I feel like, at this point of the season. But that's kind of...
But we didn't get any of those this weekend. I mean, 4-0 was about as close as it was. We didn't have the, like, 6-1, 5-1 games. So it's evening out. I mean, I like the fact that there are goals because week one, we had some worries. Yeah. There were some nil-nils, and it was kind of like, uh-oh, are people going to take some while to fire? It's been okay.
Last one. Let's get out on U.S. national team. Bruce Abenmokan. And I'm not going to go into the exact language and wording he used, but basically saying, how can you pick David Bingham over Bill Hamid to fill in for Brad Guzan?
Well, to be fair, that decision was made before, as I said, David Bingham turned into the human croquet wicket. But
he's saying it doesn't matter. He's saying Bill
Hamid.
He's
saying he's saying from the start he should have gone Bill Hamid.
He's saying how can Bill Hamid not be higher in the rankings of goalkeepers?
Wasn't Bill Hamid coming back from injury to start this season? So, I mean, that's
but
a big part of it.
He's out there playing.
Yeah, it is. But if you've got Guzan gone and you've got Tim Howard, who had pulled out of that Mexico game and hasn't been healthy himself, I think you got to go with the guy that you feel is, A, the healthiest, and, B, the better player. And I think Bruce is saying both those things with
and
David Bingham.
Do you think David Bingham? Well, who would you pick?
Ah, man, I'm not like a goalkeeper coach or expert. He's not going to play. I think you go Bingham. And it's unfortunate that he had to do what he did leading into this. Because if he hadn't done that, I don't think we're talking about this. I don't think Bing comes in this hot.
I mean,
I know that a lot of people love Bill Hamid, and I think he's a great goalkeeper. And I think he's one of, if not the best in MLS, probably top three. But I think David Bingham is right in that category as well. And sometimes it's about who fits in with the group better. So that's my political talk, and that's how I'm
spinning
that.
I bet you if
we
laid it out right now, you'd have like 8 goalkeepers in the top three.
I know. Top threes are meant to be broken. That's the deal. Let us know what you think at Extreme Radio, Extreme at MLSsoccer.com. Big thanks to Brian Dunseth for joining us. We'll be back later this week. Tune in for that one. The Hex. Big games coming up.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.